Thank you.
Good morning. So I've been talking about enterprise smart contracts. I have 15 minutes. It's a pretty deep topic. This is also known as cripplets. Enterprise smart contracts is a nice marketing term for people that aren't very technical. But let's talk about some background first. So in Azure, Microsoft's cloud platform, we have some pillars that we've built upon to build this platform. The first of which is identity. Azure Active Directory is an open federated identity system. Supports open authentication. It's the dominant identity system used in enterprises today. And it allows us to do open federation. Second is secret storage, or HSMs. So we have HSMs at scale and something called Azure Key Vault that lets you bring your own keys, bring your own secrets, and things like that. Recently announced the confidential compute platform, which is essentially describing enclaves at scale in the cloud, both SGX and what we call hypervisor-based or VSM-based enclaves that allow you to have secure confidential compute in the cloud. And then lastly, hyperscale. So we have a platform that was developed called Service Fabric that runs things like Xbox Live. So we have like this massively scalable platform that we can build upon. So let's describe what this does. So ESC is the acronym we're using, so Enterprise Smart Contracts essentially. Under the covers, we call it the ESC framework running the ESC fabric running that has some core infrastructure capabilities. The first of which is we authenticate users. So we use Azure Active Directory to authenticate these users. Now, don't think we can use this to authenticate using Facebook if you want to. But essentially, you authenticate the user and attach a message that flows into the system to create a secure session. Cripplets themselves have dependencies, meaning this is what I require. Do I require an enclave? What kind of runtime environment do I need? Am I a .NET or a Java or a Rust cripplet? So those dependencies are inspected. And then the infrastructure has essentially many HSMs available to it. Those can be in the cloud. They can also be on-prem. And then we pool scarce resources. Enclaves would be one of them. But we envision that you would want to use things like FPGAs to accelerate zero-knowledge proof generation, ASICs, GPUs, whatever, some sort of combination. So we allow you to have single sort of, we call them delegates, essentially, but you're delegating your cryptographic operations to this enclaved environment. So what happens at runtime is a crypto delegate gets built that will be injected with an enclave with the appropriate secrets and the appropriate APIs that you're trying to use for the platform. So if you're using ECC, you'll get the appropriate ECC libraries. You also might get a composite where you would get both an enclave and an FPGA, and you could call this thing a foo, and give me a foo at runtime, and then I'll have my algorithm generate a zero knowledge proof or whatever you want to do. So you can really compose this hardware acceleration for your requirements that you have. So this allows us to do things like dynamic allocation and deallocation. So we pull these resources to get massive scale. It also reduces cost. So you can start doing very innovative things with low cost because you're only paying for what you're using. So you're not going to pay for all this stuff 24/7. You're going to pay for it for the second or two, depending on what you're doing, that you're actually using it per transaction. Now, we'll talk more about some of the ramifications of this, but you can do everything from just basic signatures to threshold encryption. So you can do encryption in the cloud as well using these. So the broader framework, we do support multiple ledgers down at the bottom. We have, a couple years ago, we announced blockchain as a service, which is, I unfortunately named it that for some reason. It seemed like a good idea at the time. But essentially, it was based on Ethereum. Everything we do at Microsoft really starts with Ethereum, and we sort of branch out from there. So Enterprise Ethereum Alliance or Quorum and things like that. But we also support Corda and these others because we abstract them away with what we call the blockchain router. And this is a common abstraction pattern where we define a basic interface where anyone can write a connector that plugs into the router. It has a simple interface definition. And then it has very blockchain-specific, it knows how to create blockchain-specific transactions. You will create contract proxies, which is essentially taking that next step where we talk about a type system. Cripplets don't know what blockchain they're talking to. They don't care. They deal with message types. So strongly typed messages are very important for contractual business. We need to know not only what a message structure is, but what data types are embedded. We don't allow variants, so they need to be declared integers or doubles or floats or whatever, or composite types. Cripplets will then use those message types, and then they pass them down to the proxy. The proxy can ingest those message types and then convert them into the appropriate blockchain transaction. You see the script delegates attached to these various locations. These things are, again, generated on the fly. We support multiple signatures. So you have, if you're familiar with certificate chains, we call it a cripplet onion, which are layers of crypto validations of each operation, both from an attestation standpoint that the code ran confidentially from the enclave to the source of your data actually came from where it was supposed to come. So we create this signature onion. Each signature validates all the nested signatures underneath it. So we sign at multiple levels. We also have cipher diversity. So you can sign with ECC, RSA, any ciphers that you want to support. It's a very flexible platform. Up at the top, so these cripplets, we'll talk about them a little bit later. You can write them in .NET, Java today, but we'll support any sort of platforms. We're agnostic what you want to do. It'll be open so that you can port your own runtime and create your own container that runs in this platform. Above the layer, we're using standard AMQP. If you're not familiar with that, that's a ISO standard for messaging that's used in the enterprise. So we're using AMQP as the basic interface. And those messages, those strongly typed messages, are what are being passed back and forth. So you define your API with your types and your messages. You can stick a REST or an RPC on top of that message, AMQP, very simply and easily. Or you can just serialize your messages to JSON, which is the default. So it's a very open platform, very easy to integrate into any front-end application or any existing application. A couple of things that you should note about this. The cripplets are running above the blockchain. They can run in a singleton pattern. You can also reach out. Cripplets can communicate with each other. So we talk about blockchain oracles. You can certainly write a blockchain oracle here and write attested data to any underlying blockchain if you're thinking about writing an oracle and you're concerned how do I support multiple blockchains? This is one way for you to do that, to write your oracle once and support many different blockchains. But you can also do oracle services directly from cripplet to cripplet. So you can have a utility cripplet, which is what we usually call an oracle because it can do more than that, actually pass attested data to another cripplet that's running a contract. We have three basic cripplets. You have your utility cripplets. Those are the ones that can provide attested data, but you can also connect to an ERP system. You could react to some sort of event that happens in the outside world very easily. And then that utility cripplet can then communicate with what we call a contract cripplet, which represents your typical smart contract or enterprise smart contract is what we call it. But we also have a token cripplet as well, in the spirit of this conference, which essentially is a contract cripplet with token behaviors exposed as well. And it allows you to create these types of scenarios. So the token cripplet, for example, is very interesting. If you create a token cripplet, the cripplet actually controls all the ERC-20 sort of functions. So the issue, the transfer, the burn, the minting, all that stuff is controlled through the cripplet itself. But then I can extend the behavior. So I can add behavior for my token off-chain. And I can also assume the identity and use the identity of the person that has a balance for that token. So you can do some very interesting things with this platform as well. So we're not really sure what customers are going to do, but the interesting thing is you can do cripplet to cripplet, cripplet to the outside, and then also you can create your proxy. You can have it monitor events on the local blockchain and react to them as well in the outside world. So, how do you get started? A lot of people have asked, we've been talking about this for some time, when do I get to see code? When can I play with this? Well, We tried to get this done before the show, and we're going to come out and say, hey, it's open. Here, go to this URL, and you can get a test drive. But we couldn't pull that off in time. But it's soon. Within the next, two weeks, we'll be able to have an environment where you can go out and do a test drive, where you can stand up this environment, and you can build an enterprise smart contract and cripplets from scratch to start learning in it. This platform is currently in what we call early adopter, or private early adopter preview, or private preview, which we're going into a regular cadence. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But if you're building these things, essentially all you have to do, the infrastructure is built for you and abstracted from you. So as you would expect, you simply focus on what you're trying to do. The first thing you always will talk about is contract first development. So you'll develop your message types. So you define your message types, and you can pick your language in .NET or Java, and this is what it looks like. Pretty simple, getters and setters are basically properties. This is in C#. We're inheriting, this is a token, cripplet inherits from the base token. And then it has constructor messages, create token that derives from the base token constructor. And we have return types. Down here you can see others. We can, if I have time, I'll switch over and show you some more of the code. But this is an example of the types that you'll do. So really simple types that serialize to JSON. So you just got to pay attention to that. You really the framework takes care of the serialization for you, so it's standardized. If you've ever done cross-platform serialization with JSON, it's not as smooth as it always seems it should be. But we've taken care of that for you. Next, you then write your cripplet code, utility, contract, or token. Depending on what you're writing, you'll derive from, you always derive from the base cripplet class here, so this is the token cripplet. Then you'll implement the interfaces. So there's a contract cripplet interface. By default, a token cripplet is a contract cripplet. You cannot be a token cripplet without being a contract. And that has to do with the isolation level that the code runs in. Whereas a utility cripplet can be multi-tenant, so I can have multiple subscribers to an Oracle type service. A contract cripplet can only have one binding, or what we call it essentially a binding. Each instance of that same binding gets a new instance of a cripplet that's either running in a full enclaved environment or a partial enclaved environment with a crypto delegate. So cripplet have basic constructors. This is where we construct this API. Cripplets can be inspected by simply passing a real simple message into the framework and saying, tell me about the cripplets you have registered. Then you can pick one cripplet and say, tell me what your API is. What that means is it's going to take here its functions. These are these message types I defined as the types. When I say these all serialize automatically to JSON. So when I query it, it's going to serialize all these and say, here are my functions with their JSON structure, and here are my returns with their JSON structure. So you know exactly how to communicate with it. So you can construct your own libraries, or we can provide you a jar file or a DLL for you to work with those types. Very simple stuff. Lastly, you need to generate your proxy. So this is where the where tooling comes into play. So we're doing a lot of work around the tooling, so we'll generate as much of the proxy as possible for you. So there's two types of ways to generate object models against some sort of underlying data structure. You can do it what we call data first. That's where you've established the database, like a SQL database or whatever, or Solidity in this case. And then I can use that to then create a proxy from that structure. So meaning I already have my Solidity defined, I can then generate a proxy. Now, usually when you're writing your Solidity for an enterprise smart contract, you only want to put the logic down that makes sense to put down in your enterprise smart in your smart contract. So you want to do things that if you're transitioning assets or changing ownership for assets that are provenanced on that blockchain, then you want to do that and perform that logic on the in your Solidity code. There's lots of nuances there, but essentially we'll generate the proxy first. Code first is where you have the type system that you defined, and we'll then create the Solidity for you. You do some basic customizations. These proxies can be written in any platform as well. This is using the Ethereum, so the Ethereum team, the guys at Consensus, are doing a lot of work for generating the proxies for this platform. And we expect each of the major platform providers and anyone will be able to take the standard interface, which has an initialize function and an execute async function. That's it. And you can plug it into the router, and it just works. So again, today we're supporting .NET, JVM, and native. We'll listen to our customers. If you have a particular runtime you're interested in, there's enough demand, we'll do the work. Of course, it'll be open so that you will be able to create your own and port over there. We're going to do rich tooling with Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code as well. You'll see that in the test drive when you start to play with it in a couple weeks. Follow-ups, I'm out of time here. Come by our booth. We're just outside the door here. We're doing demos. You can go more in-depth in code. You get hands-on, the hands-on labs to actually see what it looks like. Watch for the test drive coming out in a couple of weeks. That'll include the hands-on labs, the extensions, and the sample source will be released at the same time. So if your code's not working, you can go look at the finished code to see what you've done wrong. And then we'll be transitioning from private preview to more public previews in the coming months. Thank you.